Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy! And also a quick reminder, we do have a Patreon where Riley and I do a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket. You have access to that exclusively on Patreon at the $5 tier, which also gives you early Monday releases and all ad-free content. So check it out.
Today's trigger warnings are explicit sexual content, death, grief, violence, and sexual assault.
Review!
Yay!
Review!
I'm trying to think of new ways to, you know, introduce another review, so tell me how you guys like that one.
Wah, wah, wah!
DJ Khaled.
Another one.
This one is from Dwyer Reads, my new favorite podcast. You ladies have me dying laughing listening to your podcast. I feel like I'm just sitting with my best friends talking about all the wonderful smut and coming up with dirty innuendos. Thank you for being amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening.
You're amazing.
And this week, we read Last Light by Claire Kent. And how many stars did you give it on Goodreads, Jenna?
I loved it. 4.
I gave it 10 stars. 12 stars.
Wow.
It's a million stars. Yeah, I read this back in 2022, and it was my favorite book of the entire year. I thought it was amazing. I've heard people say that they think it's boring, and to them I say, you're wrong. This book is perfect.
You're boring.
Yeah, you're boring.
At first, I was like, I didn't know how I felt about, like, the whole vibe of it. But I really liked the dynamic between the two. I really liked it a lot.
Is this a contemporary?
It is. Mm-hmm. Mm. It is post-apocalyptic, which we have not done. I love the genre, like a post-apocalyptic survival romance. There is an entire series that's based on this world. So this one is a standalone, but the rest of the series follows different stories within the universe and everyone's kind of connected. I've read a few of them and they're all really good.
So there is a guy that was their local mechanic that is now standing over the one motorcycle that still has gas that she just found at an abandoned gas station. He has a shotgun in his hand and he's going through her bag with his other hand. And it's been more than a year since she's gotten her hand on a working vehicle. She took 3 steps into the woods so she could pee behind a tree, and Mr. Mechanic swooped in and took her new motorcycle and is going through her shit. When she's done peeing, she pulls out her gun and lifts it to him and she tells him to back up off of her stuff. She's pissed. And his body's tense and she, like, obviously catches him off guard. And he puts his hands up in the air and he's like, it's okay, I'm not gonna hurt you. And picture this. This man is over 30. He's not particularly handsome, she describes, but he's not ugly. He's strong and has rough features. He has light brown hair that's unkept. Obviously, he's dirty because they're, like, in, like, a post-apocalyptic world. But he's strong and has good definition in his arms. Not like he hits the gym, but from, like, daily use. Like a man shit.
He's a man.
Yeah, he's a man.
Just a manly, I just picture man.
Like a man.
He's a man.
And he takes another step back and he speaks to her gently, almost like soothingly. And he says that his name is Travis Farrell, that he's from Meadows too, and that he won't steal or hurt her. Internally, she's thinking that she wants to believe him and that she really would love to. That her grandpa always said that he was an honest man, but 4 years ago is when everything changed. He's like, you're Lane Patterson. I definitely worked on your car. He's like trying to humanize himself to her. He's like, will you please lower your gun? And she's like, no, absolutely not. Because she's like literally trying to blow his brains out. And he's like, please don't shoot me.
He says, no. I don't want to die today.
What's her name? Lane Patterson. So we have Travis and we have Lane. He asks if she's going to Fort Knox and that he is too and they should stick together. She remembers when everything went to shit and that Travis would return with deer or wild turkey or whatever that he would catch and that he would share with everyone else. And she asks him why he didn't leave town with everyone else. And he confesses that he had a sick little 5-year-old girl that he couldn't leave. She could hear the pain in his voice, and he said that she died a couple weeks ago because of her lungs. He asked her the same question, and she said that she stayed for her grandma, who also died because of her lungs. The ash in the atmosphere for the past few years has killed as many people and animals as the droves and natural disasters. She's tempted to take him up on the offer to go with him to Fort Knox, since he comes across as decent, but sometimes even the horrible ones can come across as decent. She knows that not all men are animals. Some men are still good, but all the ones that she knew are all dead now.
Honestly, it would be so hard for me to trust anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like any stranger, any person that I did not know or anything like that, I feel like I'd be like, get away from me.
And once you find out what the droves are and what they do, you'd be like, yeah, I'm not trusting anybody. It's the classic, like, would you rather be stuck in the woods with a bear or a man?
Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Would you guys like to survive an end of the world type of thing? I'd like to die immediately.
I've read a few post-apocalyptic romances, and if it turns out like those ones, yeah, why not?
Oh.
I think that I'd give it a fair shot. I would give it a fair fighting chance, but if I saw some fucked up shit and like there was one thing that I know that I would never be able to come back from,
right?
I think I'd probably kill myself.
Like the thought of having to like watch everyone I love around me die and I possibly survive that?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Take me out.
I think I could probably get through that.
I think I could probably get through that, but like if like a zombie or something like bites my arm off or my leg, and like I could probably survive it, and then like, but I'd have to go through life with like my arm was cut off, my leg was cut off, like, you know.
There's no zombies in this one.
No, I know, but like
Jenna's like, everyone around me can die, that's fine. I just don't want anything to happen to me.
I could come back from my friends and family dying, but if I lose an arm, I'm out.
Once I'm down a limb, it's game over.
I get it.
If I was in Lane's situation, though, like, I'd still give it a fighting shot for sure.
Yeah, she's young. She's sexy.
She's doing all right for herself.
She's sexy.
She's been through some trauma, that's for sure, but you know.
I know, she has.
So he's like, you can come with me to Fort Knox. We can stick together. I can protect you. And she's like, I want that to happen so bad. Like, I don't want to be by myself, but no offense, now that the world's gone to shit, there's no police, there's no protection. Men are out on the streets raping women, killing whoever the fuck they want. I can't trust anyone. All the good men that she knew in her life are completely gone because they were all killed and murdered and died for whatever reason. So she decides to go her lonesome way.
She's an independent gal.
She is. It took 4 years for the world to basically fall apart. She was 16 when asteroids slammed into Germany, causing literally everything to get fucked up. The government like saw that it was going to happen, but the chances of it happening were so slim. And then like all it takes is like one little thing for it to happen. And it actually did happen. And it caused literally like a chain reaction of the earth reacting to it. Tsunamis, hurricanes, earthquakes on every single continent.
Literally my biggest fucking fear.
Yep.
So there's immigrants left and right. People died. People bunkered up. The world population has literally been cut in half at this point. And that was at the last radio transmission. Some people joined mobs known as the droves. So that's what I said earlier. The droves are like basically mafia mobs taking over everything and anything, killing whoever and whatever they want. A month ago, 400 survivors in Meadows, which is their hometown, packed up and left for Fort Knox. After hearing rumors that the army base in Kentucky is guarded by what's left of the military and they're accepting refugees. The gas in her motorcycle takes Lane almost 50 miles before it runs out. She only has 300 left to go. She sees a truck on the side of the road and has to check it, even though it's probably empty because she's trying to like siphon the gas for it. When she gets to the driver's side door, she jumps when she sees a man slumped over, soaked in blood, and he's still warm. The man groans and opens his eyes and just whispers Fort Knox. And she's like, what about it? And he passes her a note and he says, take this, Marshall, watch for Wolf. And then hands her the note and dies. At first, she didn't want to read it because she was like, I don't want to be nosy, but whatever.
I'd be nosy as hell.
I know.
Oh, I'd read it immediately.
It's the end of the world.
Yeah. The note says, Fort Bragg fallen. Drove 3,000. On the way to Fort Knox. Evacuate. Look for sign of Wolf. And she's like, shit. Shit, shit, shit. Everyone is about to become drove dinner.
Wait, do the people in the droves eat other people?
They don't, like, say cannibalism, but it does say in there that they kill and do anything that they want. So I'm assuming so because it's the end of the world and they're out of animal resources and food resources.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them.
Scary.
There's no way that she's going to make it in time to Fort Knox because it's one person versus 3,000. What the hell?
See, I would just die.
So a car comes down the road and she knows it's a dumb idea, but an ounce of hope thinks that it might be Travis since he's heading that way. So she makes her way out of the street and she's greeted, but not by Travis. It's three guys and one girl that are in the car and they're all pissed drunk. They're not the nasty kind of men that she should fear who rape and kill, but drunk men who no longer have consequences never equal a good time. She was about to tell them to keep driving when she hears another car approach. It's Travis.
Oh, hey, Travis.
Hey, Travi.
Hey, Trav. He pulls up and he tells everyone to get out. He throws the key in the middle of a field and he tells them to go find it. He's just like, get out, like search for those keys. He just wants to make sure that Lane is okay. And once he finds out that they didn't hurt her and everything was fine, they end up just taking off. He was able to find a Jeep in the town that they were in. So she ditches the motorcycle and they jump in the Jeep. They go over to the truck where the dead guy was and they take the rest of the supplies that he had in his car. He had a bunch of water, canned good, and Travis looked over the dead guy's body and he saw that he had a pistol on him and throws it in his car and adds it to his very impressive weapon pile. Lane tells him about the note and shows him and he's silent for a very long time and he reassures her that the drove take a while to get to place because the amount of people that they travel with. Travis notices that Lane's arm is bleeding, so she shrugs off her flannel and she's left in just her tank top. She stopped wearing bras years ago when the underwires like started popping out, so she knows her nipples are clearly showing through and his eyes are definitely snagged on her tank top.
Oh.
Because it's basically like see-through at this point because it's thin white material that's like really like worn.
Oh, no.
Because she's like so sweaty, it's like clinging to her and it's basically like see-through. And he's like,
oh, I bet anything would make you horny in the apocalypse.
Oh, I'm sure.
I bet he'd come right then and there. He'd be like, ah!
I came in my pants.
She takes a moment to thank him for stopping, even though she's basically okay. Then they're on the road again, but this time together. So they only drive an hour before they have to pull over. They can't drive on the road at night because of their headlights. They find an old farmhouse they're able to claim as theirs for the night, and they find a room that has kids' bedrooms, has two twin beds.
Ugh!
I know.
Two beds.
I was so excited. I was like, yes, a one bedroom. They set up for the night, and Travis barricades them in. She's trying to fall asleep, and she realizes that because the only time he really talked to her was when she had a gun pointed at him, maybe he doesn't really want to talk to her, really get to know her. Every time he talks to her, it's clipped straight to the point. So now she's thinking about all the things she wants to say to him in her head, like how he needs a haircut, how she's almost 21 and he doesn't need to always call her girl, how she's sorry that he lost his little girl. Does he still feel the need to smoke cigarettes or has that habit died? He's got really good arms. She's glad that he isn't a creep, and it's on that note that she finally falls asleep. Travis wakes up as the sun is coming up, and she slept so good. They plan out their trip following an old two-lane state road. They'll need to plan to try to find gas, or they'll have to leave the Jeep and be shit out of luck. They go through three abandoned towns before finding a car in the garage that had gas. They were able to siphon it out, and they spent the rest of the day on the road. They take a little pit stop to pee, and they're both dripping sweat at this point, and Travis reaches up his shirt and uses it to wipe the sweat off of his face. Lane's thinking about how bad she wants to do that to herself, but if she did, Travis would probably lose his shit and run for the hills at all of her exposed skin. That thought alone made her giggle, and she covered her mouth and she was like, holy fuck, like when was the last time I even laughed? Because this whole time she's been spending it pretty much alone. He was like, do you want to share what's so funny? She's like, no, probably not, because like she's making fun of him in her head. An hour later, they run into a still active community that hasn't been abandoned yet, but that means that their streets and everything is still protected and they're not letting anyone or anything through. So they have to find an old mountain trail that will eventually lead them to the road, but that's like 30 miles detour, basically. They're about halfway down the trail when it starts to get dark and they have to pull over to set up camp. They get a fire going and they're next to a river so they can boil water and refill their empty water bottles. And because they got a nice little water stream going, Lane decides to have a bath since she smells like absolute dog shit. She tells Travis that he should probably take one too because he smells bad.
I was gonna say, they probably stinky.
Lane stepped in the water in her thong and white tank top and is perfectly content. She feels clean for the first time in what feels like forever, and they hear a loud snapping sound. Travis jumps up and grabs his gun and heads for the forest. Lane stands up and walks towards her pistol, and he returns saying that there was nothing there. It must have been like a branch that broke or something. And then he like looks at her and his eyes rake down her body, and he like made a weird little like breath hitching sound. And then he did like a quick little look at her again before she covered up, and she was like, you're basically standing there naked. And she's like, sorry, like I thought the gun was more important than my modesty at this point.
I mean, yeah,
my bad, I thought you were gonna die.
Do you want me to protect you or be clothed?
Not my fault I'm so hot and sexy. God.
Sorry I'm so hot and skinny. Oh my God.
I'm emaciated.
They described her, I think she's like a thick curvy queen. They said she got big full breasts and she's a curvy queen.
Oh, go off, girl.
He said that he was going to bathe too because he's stinky. And he takes his shirt off and he is ripped. She's basically trying not to drool at this point and she loves the look at him. While he's like in the water, she's trying not to cop a peek at him. But the only thing that's stopping her is that when she was bathing, he was like being very respectful and like kind of like standing guard and had his back towards her and like didn't look at all. Even though like obviously he was like a man and probably wanted to, but like he was very respectful while she was bathing. So that was like the only thing that's keeping her from not wanting to cop a peek while he's bathing because she was like, fuck, he respected me. So I guess I have to respect him.
Ugh, no, I would look.
Like, side eye.
I'd say, turn around. Let me see it. Show me your dick. Let me see your penis.
Whip it out. They are all clean and Travis is like giving himself like a little straight razor cut, getting himself all trimmed and looking nice. Lane was like, if you're doing like some like trimming, like you should probably cut your hair. And he's like, I think you should cut your hair. Like it's so long. And that's the first thing that like when someone attacks you that they're going to grab. It kind of like, it didn't make her mad, but she was like, I'm not cutting my hair. Like it kind of like made her upset. She was like, my boobs and my hair are like the two things that I got going for me. He was like, hey, can you look to see if I got all my beard hair? And she got like really close to him. And she was like, now that he's clean, he's fucking cute. He's got pretty eyes, a pretty face. And she's thinking about it. And a pull happens between her legs. And she's like, oh, what's that feeling? Like, what's wrong with me? Why do I feel this way? She starts humming a song when she's unfolding her sleeping bag that she has to sleep in for the night. And Travis knows the song that she's humming. It's the song that her grandma used to sing in church. And he asked her to sing it. So she sings the song and she sings the rest of it for him.
Oh, cute.
Travis wakes her up as his shift is over for night watch and it's her turn now. She's watching him sleep and she's trying to remember all of their interactions from him before. One thing in particular sticks out and it's a conversation that he had with she now knows as his ex-wife Cheryl. She brought her car in at his mechanic shop and he was on the phone with her saying that he knows that she's unhappy, that he didn't do whatever she thought he did. Lane knows that he obviously still loves her because he was concerned for her safety when the drove thing happened and that was the first emotion that he pretty much showed this entire time, besides when he was talking about his daughter. She gets up to go pee and comes back and notices that he's still sleeping, but he's like tossing slightly, kind of like he sensed even in his sleep that she left. She puts her foot up against the rock where it was laying before and his hand reaches out in his sleep and wraps lightly around her ankle. She doesn't pull away and he stays there for the rest of the night. The next 3 days, they manage to get off the trail, search for some gas, camp. They have to go off the trail again, camp again. Each day, Travis is a little bit more withdrawn, but by the fifth day, they finally get into Kentucky. The Jeep is finally running out of gas and luckily the town they stopped in was abandoned. The house that they stopped at had a car full of gas and an extra gas can that they got to fill up. They basically loot the house with whatever they could find and go through everything. Their kitchen, they got canned goods and water, the bathroom, shampoo, conditioner, body wash. They got fresh clothes, underwear, which she literally hasn't had fresh underwear in I don't even want to think about how long.
Oh, she's just freeballing it?
No, dude, she's been wearing dirty chonies.
Yeah. I would freeball
it. Get a little yeasty.
A little yucky down there.
They literally grab anything they can get their hands on and anything that they have room for. It takes them 30 minutes to organize their Jeep after the haul, and Lane is so excited that she claps her hands and she throws her arms around Travis in a hug. At first, he kind of stands there and then slowly hugs her back. When she pulls back, she smiles at him and his lips are tugged up just slightly. He's smiling. This is like the first time that he's ever shown her like any emotion besides like grunting and like nodding his head. He tries to deny it, but Lane is like, try to deny it all you want, but I know you're just excited as I am. They're driving past the Dollar General and it'd be stupid not to check it out just to see if there's anything in there that's worth having. Travis goes in and tells her to stay there and guard the car. She's waiting for him and she hears voices. She's immediately on high alert and she sees two children riding bikes, and then after them, three women and two men. The women tell her that she's safe and that they're just passing through, but if she's alone, she can join them and that it's not safe for her out alone. She tells her that she's not alone, and the guy is like, are you sure? You won't be in any danger from us. Jimmy here doesn't have a woman, and he'd take real good care of you. She's like, I have a man. Travis comes up behind her, and he's like, yeah, she has a man.
Oh.
Lane wants to end the standoff, especially because there's children around, and they get in the car and they drive off. It's quiet because they got in a little argument about about whether or not Lane thought they were dangerous people or not. Travis asks if she's mad and she said no. She just hates that things are the way they are now. She's like, I hate that I have to be considered safe if I'm with a man. And he's like, it's just because you're so tiny. His response made her feel better, surprisingly. Like, he just says the right things to her and he supports her. He also tells her that men can't make it without women either. Like, for survival, they need each other. And he admits to her that he needs her, that she makes things easier. She makes him want to keep going. She realizes that this is the most that he's pretty much talked to her this entire time, and she wants to keep talking, but she doesn't want to push him too hard where he completely closes up. They talk about how she held her own pretty much on the first encounter, how Lane did good, but she relied too much on her gun, and without it, she would have been defenseless because she doesn't know how to defend herself. She asked him if he teach her how to defend herself, and he said yes, he would. They take a break from driving, and Travis goes to take a pee. While he's gone, Lane is rearranging some of her supplies. She smells Travis before he comes up behind her, but before she could do anything, he pulls hard on her braids, tugs her back up against the front of him, and at first she was scared, but then it turned into anger, and she's like, what the fuck? He's like, what? I'm helping you. You asked me to teach you to defend yourself, so I am.
He just does that out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Surprise, bitch!
I would have been pissed too.
For a second, I thought this was going to be like a moment he's going to yank her braids, pull her up to him, and mwah, kiss him. But no, he's like, defend yourself, bitch. I'm attacking you. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
She's like, yeah, but I knew it was you. I could smell you. He like gets a little bit like stiff, and he's like, everybody smells the same. Nobody wears deodorant anymore. These are hard times. And she's like, I smell you, like your distinct smell. I knew I was safe. You know how like pheromone, like the person that you like. I don't know how to explain it, but like I knew exactly what she meant.
Fun fact about me is I have no sense of smell, and I never have. So anybody really can attack me. I'm vulnerable.
Fun fact about me, I will put my entire nose in Zach's dirty armpit and just take a whiff. I love it.
I do remember that about you.
Because you love Zach.
Armpit sniffer.
Yeah, that's what I told him. But then I was like, do you like my stink? And he was like, no. And I was like, feelings not mutual then, I guess.
Andrew doesn't like my stink either. There have been a few times where he's been like, hey, I think you stink a little.
You're pretty ripe.
I'm like, I don't know. I can't smell.
I can't smell shit, so I don't know.
Greg and I, like, we both love our stinkiness. There's a part in here where I think it's explained in the book. It's just like the pheromones of it, but it's like there. It's present, but it's not unpleasant. That's how it is. Present, but it's not unpleasant. But like, I'm the same with Greg. I will like, even when he's thinking, I'm like, and it doesn't smell bad to me.
I told Zach, I was like, I want to bottle up your armpit stink, and I want to put it in a candle, and I want to light it, and I want the whole house to smell like your armpit.
Even if it's like stinky, it's not like stinky. It's present, but it's not unpleasant.
That's like people that buy like candles that smell like cigarettes.
Ew, is that a thing?
Yes, it's a thing.
Maybe that's their pheromones.
It's just some lady that's like, hey there, honey. My name's Tammy. I'm a smoke here for you.
Can I get a candle of
Marble Reds?
Marble Reds, please. The Yankee Candle. Pall Mall. American Spirit. Yellow.
I love this fictional lady.
Tammy, we love you.
She's like, I know your distinct smell. I could literally smell you. He still teaches her a lesson on defense, and after some teaching, she's able to get out of his hold. The panic's there at first, and he's like, what can you move? And he's able to like teach her when she's in these things, find the body part that you're able to move and like use that to get out of your situation. So she's able to get out of his hold, and it makes her feel powerful. He runs at her again, and he yanks her hard against him, and he puts her in a chokehold. He's trying to teach her ways to get out of the hold, and she rolls her body, and her hips, like, roll against him, and she finds him hard behind her.
Oh!
But this time, she's squirming, but for a different reason, and he's like, damn it, woman!
Can move my penis in ya.
She realizes she can move her arm. She's like, oh, fuck. She's, like, moving her butt on his dick, and the whole time, and she's like, oh, wait, I can move my arms. So she elbows him to get out of the chokehold, but she doesn't really succeed. It throws both of them off balance. They fall on the ground, her face first and him on top of her.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. You've fallen on top of me. Your penis is perfectly aligned with my butt. Oh, no.
Where did this bottle of lube come from?
Ah!
Oh, no.
Oh, no. My pants are down.
That pulsing between my legs is stronger than ever, and it's making my body do weird things I would never had considered otherwise.
shoulders. I raise my hips until my bottom finds that bulge in his jeans. I rub myself against it, making a weird little sound in my throat.
You little rat.
You horny little rat. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? She apologized and was like, I didn't realize you thought of me that way. He didn't answer her though. And she's like, are you mad at me?
Is she saying like, oh, I didn't know you thought of me that way? Like, oh, I didn't know you thought I was like hot. You were turned on by me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. That's brave.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because you're like in like an apocalyptic world and you're like stuck with this person, like with like your only chance of survival.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just made it awkward.
Yeah. What if he was like, oh, no, I don't.
He literally doesn't answer.
Yeah, I would have immediately started crying. I would have been like, say it! Say it! Say you think I'm hot!
Can you lie to my face?
She asked if he's mad at her, and he said, no, it happens. It's no big deal. That still would have made me feel like shit, but okay.
100%. Also, you're the one that got a boner,
right?
But he's like, I'm just a man. I can't control it.
They get to the outskirts of town. There's an old gas station and a drugstore. It's basically in shambles, but they're able to get a bunch of first aid supplies. They literally hit the jackpot. Travis even gets Lane some tampons, even though she hasn't gotten her period in months due to malnutrition. Score. We'd love that, King.
Oh, I thought you were going to say score. We love that. Not getting our period due to malnutrition.
Oh, no. He was like, do you need these? And she's like, I haven't got my period. And he was like, let's just grab it just in case.
What a gentleman.
When she asked if he got deodorant, he was like, no. Again, like bashful, but I'll make sure I bathe next time I can. She laughs and she's like, I wasn't talking about you stinking. I'm talking about me. He's like, oh, you don't smell. You're fine. She was like, maybe he thinks about my scent the way that I think about his scent. Present, but not unpleasant.
Pheromones!
Going back to the old ways. You gotta sniff out your mate.
She gonna take that pussy juice and just put it behind her ear as perfume?
Ew!
She reaches for a box of condoms and thinks about how she'd like to finally have sex because she's a virgin. She wants to have sex with Travis. She almost takes the condoms, but she doesn't want to fuck things up with him by misreading signals. She'll probably be a virgin till the end of the world.
I don't know about that, girl.
They find a house to stay in for the night, and unfortunately, or fortunately, it doesn't have a room with two beds in the same room, so they'll have to share a bed.
Oh, no!
No.
They eat one of the best meals they've had since they've been on this journey. They even get some candy from the drugstore. They haven't had candy in years. They talk about how this candy is just like Halloween, and at church, they used to call Halloween parties hallelujah parties so they could properly
hallelujah
be Christian. They talk about her grandma and how Grace, Travis's little girl, if she was still alive, that he would have taken her to Sunday school and he would have had Lane's grandma teach Grace there, and maybe she would have gone to one of those hallelujah parties too. She could hear the pain in his voice, and she reached over and grabbed his hand and held it for a second. They talked more about the hallelujah parties, and by the end, she got a genuine laugh and smile out of him. She wakes up on Travis's side of the bed, completely snuggled up against him. She untangles herself so he doesn't wake up uncomfortable, and she goes back to sleep. And this time, she wakes up on her side, but Travis is spooning her, and he's hard.
Oh, a little morning wood.
She's getting horny, and he shifts in his sleep and thrusts a little, and she's like, oh, I have to break up this contact because it feels wrong for her to feel this way about him. She's like, fuck, he didn't answer me last time. Like, I don't think the feelings are reciprocated. So she tries wiggling out of his hold, and since he's still asleep, he like holds her tighter and subconsciously does like another thrust into her. At this point, she's so turned on, it's like almost painful for her. She tries moving his arm, but he doesn't budge, so she does it a little more forcefully, and finally he wakes up and she pretends that she's still sleeping.
She's like, oh my god, oh my god.
She hears him walk into the bathroom and she's like, that's weird, like the plumbing doesn't work, so I don't know what he's doing in there. And then she hears him beating his meat.
Beating his meat?
That's not what I was expecting.
Choking the chicken.
Ringing the turkey's like, neck.
I would have been so fucking mad if I was her. I would have been so mad. I would have been like, get in here. Fuck me now.
Well, that makes her even more horny. So she decides to take matters into her own hands, too.
I hope he catches her.
And then he says, I'm going to put my dick in ya.
He's like, ew, what are you doing?
Without thinking, I slip a hand down under the waistband of my leggings until I can reach my clit. I rub it in fast heart circles, hiding my heavy breathing in a pillow. I can hear Travis. He's still working away in there, and so am I. She finishes coming just as he's about to walk out of the bathroom, and she fake pretends to be back asleep so he wouldn't know that she was doing the naughty. The day passes, and they pull up to a farmhouse that has a stream, and Travis Travis is washing himself down. They decided that they might as well stay there for the night. Since he was in the water, she said that she's going to grab the Jeep and pull it down to them. She gets to the car and puts her gun down inside the car when she notices that they left the hatch down. She goes to shut it and a male voice comes up behind her and she turns around and there's two men walking up close behind her. She pulls out her knife and she tells them that she's not alone and to back up, and she tries to scream for Travis, but she locks up like with fear. Literally nothing comes out. She runs towards one of them and slices his arm with her knife and tries to run to the car to grab her pistol, but the other guy literally charges towards her and basically tries to rip her shirt off and says that he's gonna fuck her whether or not she wants it. And finally she's able to scream. She bites him and he punches her in the face. There's literally like a growl of human sound and it's Travis. He gets the pathetic lump of a man off of Lane and stabs him in the throat. He goes to kill the other guy and Lane tells him that he tried stopping him because he did. Like when the guy was like, I'm gonna fuck you, the guy was like, dude, she said no, leave her alone. Travis shoots the air and tells him to run. He does, even though his arm's like bleeding out profusely. Travis runs over to her and checked her over. She's okay and like whimpering, but her head is throbbing because the guy like punched the fuck out of her. She says that she really needs to get the sweat of that man off of her, so he picks her up and he carries her to the water, and she doesn't even care about her modesty at this point. She straight up just takes her top off and starts washing herself off, and he takes a towel and gently starts washing her back. They end up moving to a new house, and as they're laying down, she's still shaken about everything that happened to her, and he asked if she wanted to be held and she said yes, and she falls asleep in his arms. The next day, Travis tells her going forward, wherever she goes, so will he, so that way she's always protected. He was trying to give her space before, but he doesn't ever want her to be in that position again. They posted up in a spot in the woods to camp for the night, and thankfully there's a water source, so they get to wash up. Lane strips in just her little tank top and undies and washes up when it's Travis's turn. He's a chiseled muscle perfection, and when he gets out of the water and towels himself off, she notices that he's hurt from the stupid almost rapist. She's pissed that she didn't notice it before, and also that he didn't tell her. She cleans, ointments, and then bandages his wound and realizes that she's horny just by being in the close proximity of his half-nakedness. They lock eyes and her nipples are hard and his dick is hard. She can see it through his boxers. As if he gets like snapped back into reality, he like apologizes because like of all the sexual tension, and he tells them that they should get back on the road. They get a couple more hours in. They find a nice house and make sure that they're safe for the night, and she just wants to finally experience what it's like being with Travis. She's always drooling over him, so she's like, let's man up and actually do it. And she does. She tells him straight up that she wants to have sex with him.
We love a forward girl.
I know, yeah. She got balls. She tells him that she wants to have sex with him and that she likes him, so why shouldn't she want to? She, like, pleads this whole case with him because she wants him to know that she genuinely chooses this and she isn't coerced into it. Because a lot of the times, like, especially now in the, like, apocalyptic stage, women are offering up sex for protection.
Yeah.
She's like, do you want to have sex with me? And he says, yes. She's like, perfect, right now? And he's like, yeah. She strips for him to just her tank top and her chonies, and he's like exploring her body, like, and they're becoming best friends. He's sucking her breasts, and when he realizes that she's wet and like truly, truly wants this, he gets so turned on. Before, he had like a little chub going on, but now he's got a full raging boner.
Rock hard.
He's still teasing her, and then he tells her to open her legs and starts rubbing her pussy all over her underwear.
You liking this, Lane? I don't know. Every time they're like, you liking this? I'm like,
he's a gruff man.
No. He asks as he slides my underwear down and off my legs. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I'm his eyebrows pulled together. You're what? I'm dying here. Please. I need to come soon. I'm going to make you come. I'm going to make you come real good. There's a hot promise in his eyes that surprises me and makes my whole body clench in excitement.
I'm going to make you come real good.
He slides one finger inside of her and then another and starts fingering her, bringing her close to the edge. He gives her clit a good lick, and that sent her over the edge, and she becomes completely undone. They relax, but his fingers are still inside of her, and he says that he got her so wet. Let's see if he can make her feel even better.
He fucks me with his fingers, not just pumping and rubbing. He's fucking me with his hand. Rough and fast and urgent. It feels different, harder, deeper. I gasp out a broken cry and dig my fingernails into the back of his neck. His face is still buried in the curve of my throat. I'm coming before I know to expect it. My body shaking and my heel lodged hard in his bare back.
Woof!
She says, I need something to hold on to.
Little spider monkey.
Better hold on tight, spider monkey. She told him now she wants to fuck more than just his hand. And he asked if she was sure, and she said yes, that she wants him to feel good too. She makes a conscious decision not to tell him that she's a virgin because she doesn't want him to treat her differently. She likes how things are right now, and she doesn't want it to be ruined if he'd know. So he gets naked and pulls down his boxers and puts himself inside of her. It's really fucking tight, to the point where it's overwhelming at first, then really, really good.
He's starting to grunt to our motion, a rough, primitive sound that goes right to my center. His hips are speeding up, the thrust getting more vigorous. I arch my neck and moan, hardly believing the sensual sound came from my throat. Fuck, his features are contouring. He's losing control, his rhythm intensifies. Oh fuck, reach down and rub yourself. I'm surprised by the words, shocked really, but I respond immediately. I let go of the sheet I've been clutching and move my hand down to my clit. I give it a clumsy massage as he fucks me.
Oh my god. Rub your clit.
Why is she so shocked by that?
Because she's never had anyone talk dirty to her.
Oh, that's
true. He's very, like, gruff and short. Like, he's just like, yeah, okay. And then he's like, I'm gonna make you come real good. You like that? That feeling good? Like that?
Rub your pussy.
Rub your clit. Yeah.
He gets a towel and cleans her up and asks her if it was her first time. She looked to see if there was any blood, and there wasn't. So she tensed up and she was like, was I that bad? He was sweet and trying not to make her feel self-conscious, telling her that it was good. But she obviously did admit that she was a virgin before this. She didn't tell him because she didn't want it to change anything, and she didn't want him to be more gentle. They talk about her first boyfriend, Peter, how Travis was there when they found his body. He went into the woods to go hunting and never came out. And that she should be thankful because Peter was too kind and this world now is too harsh. So now they're in a field where they're basically surrounded by 10, what she calls is like ninja women. They were like, no cars, no one around. They should have been able to hear people come up. And then all of a sudden they turn around and there's 10 women surrounding them, all with weapons raised, all pointed at them. Travis tries to offer up their Jeep with their food, supplies, everything in return for their safety. And the leader, her name is Maria, she was like, I don't want anything from you. I want to talk to her. And they point at Lane. They tell her that they protect women, and if she wants, they will kill Travis right now on the spot, and that she can join them.
What if that's like her longtime husband? And they're like, we'll fucking kill this man. You want me
to? That's pretty much what they're saying. Yeah. That's what they're saying. And Lane tells her that Travis is a good man. The woman gives Travis a hard once over and tells Lane that she can come with them if she'd like, and she would let Travis live. And Lane thanks her for the generous offer, but declines and says that they're going to go stick together. She looks at the woman standing in front of her and then looks at Travis, and like they like kind of have like a mutual understanding, and they decide to let her read the note from the dead man. And the woman freezes up. She tells him that she knows of others who would like to help. That way, if something were to happen to them, the message wouldn't die with them. So now that there's others that know about the drove going towards Fort Knox, the woman Maria, she gives them direct instructions on what to do, starting with the next town over, because they're definitely going to be running into some trouble with some wannabe droves. They're gonna have to ditch the Jeep at some point. And after they left, Travis asked her why she didn't want to go with them, that he could see that she wanted to. She admitted, like, of course part of her did, but the bigger part of her wanted to stay with him. He told her that he wanted her to be with him too. They're driving off-road again, and it's becoming last light.
It's the name of the book!
Yeah, because they always have to camp right before last light, because it's too dangerous to be on the road at night. And that's where all the magic happens, baby. They're driving off the road again, and it's becoming last light, so it's almost time to stop for the night. And just as they're about to stop, they see a little hidden driveway that winds up to a rundown cabin. They call that home for the night. She's like, do you think we're safe enough? And he's like, you wanna? And she's like, yeah.
I've been thinking maybe he'll take it slow after he discovered that last night was my first time. I thought maybe he'd be a bit cautious. He's not. He reaches out and he hefts me up, so I have to cling to his neck. My legs wrap around his waist as he carries me over to the old bed. He shucks his own clothes in no time, and then he's climbing on top of me, kissing his way from my throat to my breasts. I squirm as he works on one nipple and then the other, and I hook one leg around his middle, digging my heel into his bare ass. I'm hot and throbbing and frantic for him, even though we've barely started. She's a horny little rat.
So he starts fingering her.
Oh fuck, Lane. His voice is muffled by my neck. He's sucking a hickey into my skin. You're the hottest thing I've ever felt. My whole body pulses with pleasure at the compliment. I arch and mew and try to ride his fingers. He starts to move them, fucks me with them, hard and rough. Then he lowers his face and tugs at my nipple with his teeth. I sob with pleasure and then keep sobbing as the pleasure keeps coming. I never understand the sobbing. I'm like,
she's just hysterically crying.
He's murmuring out gruff encouragement as I write out my orgasm. That's right. Real good. Come for me just like that.
He pulls his fingers out of her and sucks them clean. He flips her around and fucks her doggy, and she aggressively comes again. And after they're done, she feels so good. Important. It feels good to have someone to take care of her and for her to take care of someone else. Not just physically, but in other ways too. She forgot that she had it in her. The next morning, she wakes up to her period. All over the sleeping bag. Travis is a king, and he cleans up the sleeping bag while she cleans herself. They get on the trail again, and they find a part where they might be able to cross the river, where an old bridge used to be. And they're weighing out the pros and cons. Even though it's dangerous, they decide to try to cross it. Travis gets out and helps push it up a portion of the way. And finally, when the car makes it up, he tries to walk back up and twists his ankle. Lane is driving now since Travis hurt his foot, and she finds another trail. It's a weird-looking house with solar power generator at the top. It's an off-the-grid house. Totally reinforced for the end of the world situations like this. They're in heaven. They find the owner of the house dead, but not for murder. So they assume that he croaked from his own demise. He had a key to the house on him, and they let themselves in. They have electricity. They have hot water and a toilet. Everything that they haven't had since before everything went to shit. They shower and are clean and full and laying in bed together. And Travis asked how she feels about staying there for a couple days. She's on her period and his foot is messed up, and they should stay and rest and heal safely while they can. Plus, Maria, the strong ninja jungle woman, said that she was able to send people with a message too. Even though they're on borrowed time, basically, there's other people now working on it too. Because, of course, they're still worried about the droves getting there first.
That night, they sleep for like 12 hours and wake up feeling refreshed. Travis rolls over and asks Lane how her cramps are doing, and she says they're a little bit better now, and he says, okay, cool, I thought maybe we could do a little something. And she says, like what? And then he gets like a sexy look in his eyes.
Oh.
He says he didn't want to ask last night since she wasn't feeling good, but maybe if she's feeling better this morning. And she runs her hand down his chest and keeps going until she can feel his erection in his underwear. He asks if she's up for it, and she says she's not crampy, but it might be a little bit messy. And he says that he doesn't care. A king.
He says, we got running water now, baby.
A king.
She says, okay, hold on, and runs to the bathroom to freshen up a little bit. When he tries to get on top of her, she's like, no, you need to rest your ankle, and straddles him and says she's never done this before, so she might need a little bit of help. And he smiles and says, any help you want, you got.
Oh, okay.
She runs her hands up and down his chest and abdomen, and when she leans down to give him a kiss, he freezes, and then she realizes that they'd never actually kissed on the mouth before.
Wow, that's fucking weird.
Yeah. So she just pretends like she was gonna start kissing him on the jaw the entire time. So she's like, oh, dodge. And then she starts trailing kisses down his body further and further, and he says, fuck Lane, you're killing me here, and tells her to take off her shirt and then get up here so he can get her as ready as he is. He licks and sucks at her nipples, and then he reaches down and realizes that she's not wearing any underwear, and he asks where they are, and she says she took them off for convenience. And he tells her that that was good thinking.
Yeah.
He moves her body up so she's sitting on his face and just starts to go to town.
Okay. Oh. It's not long before I'm whimpering and squirming, arousal hitting me deep and hard. Travis is still working on me with this mouth and also squeezing and stroking my ass, the back of my thighs, between my legs. When I can't take any more, I straighten up and stare down at him, flushed and panting. He gives me another one of those sexy, entitled smiles. Looks like you're ready now.
Yeah, she is.
She says sex in the morning makes him smug, and he tells her not to pretend like she doesn't like it. And she tells him that that's just his ego talking. And he says, it is, and reaches between her legs and says, it doesn't feel like it's just my ego. He moves his body and positions himself at her entrance. And as he starts to fill her up, he tells her how good she feels and asks how it is for her, and she says it's good, but she feels kind of awkward, and asks him how she's supposed to move. He tells her whatever feels good to her, and she says she wants him to feel good too, and he says, I'm inside of you. It doesn't get any better than that.
Emotion and pleasure wash over me. I try out a rocking motion, enjoying the tightness, the friction of his erection inside me. I adjust my angle, leaning forward. Then I lean backward, and I like that even more. I'm conscious of Travis's eyes on me, never straying from my face and body as I move. He's been holding onto my hips, his fingers pressed into the soft flesh of my bottom. But after a couple of minutes, he moves one hand and fumbles at my pubic hair until he finds my clit and starts massaging it. My head falls back and a long, shameless moan escapes my lips. You like that? He asks, low and gravelly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Keep doing that. My rocking accelerates as he rubs me off, and I'm coming in no time, shuddering through a fast, hard release. That was a nice one, he murmurs, a smile on his lips.
What the fuck? Good one.
Go on, dude. Good one. Yeah.
High five, dude. Good one. He tells her she can try for one more, and he continues stroking her clit as she rocks on top of him until she has another orgasm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do it like that. Just like that. Oh, God, Travis. I like it like that. I'm babbling as I arch my back, letting him fuck me from below. I'd normally be embarrassed to be so out of control of my own voice, but I just can't care about that right now. Another climax is building inside me, and something else is happening to my heart. Travis is taking what he needs in me right now, and I want to give it to him. His fingers dig into my flesh, and his head tosses back and forth on the pillow. Fuck, Lane, you're so hot, so good, so good. I ain't never. I want to hear how he'll finish that sentence, but he never does. It turns into a helpless groan as his pelvis pumps vigorously. I come again, my cry of release trapped in my throat as my body shakes through the pleasure. Then he chokes out. Oh, fuck, darling. I'm gonna come. He pulls me up so his erection slips out of me. He grips the base of his shaft with one hand and squeezes himself through his release, spurting semen all over my lower belly. We've made a real mess, semen and blood and sweat and who knows what else. I moan as I stare at the fluid smeared all over both of our naked bodies. Travis chuckles. Made kinda a mess, didn't we?
I love the voice acting.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a real career for me.
Half an hour later, Lane is in the kitchen making them breakfast when she looks down to see a dog bowl. And she tells Travis it looks really clean, even though it should be covered in dirt, and asks if he thinks maybe the dog is still hanging around and comes over to lick his bowl. And Travis says that's a long time for a dog to survive on his own. She said she saw some dog food down in the cellar and she's gonna go fill up his bowl and maybe the dog will come back. She puts the bowl out on the porch and goes back inside to eat with Travis. She does some laundry and has to continually tell Travis to sit and keep his ankle elevated while she cleans their clothes, towels, blankets, and sleeping bag. Because he's not a man that sits still. He doesn't like watching her do all this stuff while he just sits like a bump on a log.
Yeah, I get that.
Because he's a man.
He's a man. A man, man.
When she's done, she's all sweaty and exhausted, and he's glaring at her from the couch saying that he felt like a lump while she's been doing all the work. And she says she's perfectly capable of doing some work while he rests his ankle. She makes him lunch, and while she's doing the dishes after they eat, she looks out the window and sees something by the dog dish. And it's a dog.
A dog?
Don't get too attached.
Oh, no.
No!
The dog is scarfing up all the food she left outside, and it's a mess with matted hair, and she thinks it looks like some sort of Australian Shepherd mix. She tells Travis she wants to try and lure the dog inside with some beef jerky, and he tells her that the dog could be half wild by now, but she says she still wants to try.
Oh, no.
She takes the piece of jerky that he's eating and goes out to the porch saying, "Hey, buddy," in a sweet little voice to the dog, and the dog jolts and backs off, growling at her. Eventually, it slowly comes up to her and carefully eats the jerky she threw for it, and she tells him that he can have some more if he'll come closer. She's able to bribe the dog to eventually eat out of her hands, and she gives him a few little scratches and tells him that he's such a good boy, and the dog is wagging his tail now, and it makes her want to cry.
I'm scared.
You should be. Travis comes outside now, also holding jerky, but the dog looks at him and backs away, growling. Travis does the same thing that Lane did, and eventually the dog trusts him, too. They agree to try and let the dog inside the house, and they want to try and bathe him and clean up some of his cuts. They're able to get him inside, and they fuss over him for a little bit, and the dog walks over to a rug in front of the stove and falls asleep.
Do not tell me.
We are in a very vulnerable state right now. If Riley, put your headphones down and walk away.
Lane takes a shower, and she's in the middle of lathering herself up when she feels a cold breeze of air and Travis is naked getting in the shower with her, saying that he figured she'd use all the hot water, so they'd better shower together. And besides, he can help clean her up real good.
Real good. I bet he can.
I don't think cleaning is what you had in mind when you got in here. Why do you say that? He's rubbing the soap all over my chest and belly. I reach down to grab his erection with both hands because of this. That's just because you're naked. So you don't want to have sex again. Well, I wouldn't say no, but I'm not going to push. There's still a smile in his voice and his hands are moving all over me.
You know what you were doing, sir.
He says, I want to lather up them titties.
He sure does.
They wash each other off with soap and she's loving being able to touch anywhere she wants on his body and seeing how he reacts to it. And he's getting more and more aroused the more she touches him. She gets an idea and does something that she's never done before and takes a seat on the small chair in the corner of the shower. Travis asks her what she's doing and she says she wants to try something that she's never done before and she's not sure if she's going to be any good at it, and he tells her she won't hear him complaining. She asks him what happens if she does a bad job and he tells her that she's not going to do a bad job, and she asks how he would know that. And he says he'll like anything she does to him. And if a man has a woman willing to put her mouth on him and he whines about her technique, he doesn't deserve her at all.
Period.
Yeah.
I give him a firm nod. Okay, here goes. I stroke him with my fingers for a minute, thrilled when the muscles of his thighs and belly tighten. Then I lean over and flick the tip of his erection with my tongue. He makes a choke sound and his hands tighten on my head. I figure that's encouraging. I take the tip in my mouth and suck it like a lollipop. His hips give a little jerk as he gasps. I let him slip from my mouth and look up. Fuck, Lane, he's wet and flushed and gorgeous. Your technique is top notch.
Oh, she's a blowjob queen.
Top notch.
The Gluck Gluck 3000 ensues yet again.
She works up the courage to put more of him in her mouth without fully deep-throating him, and she looks up to see that he's staring down at her like a starving man, and now his hips are rocking into her face, and she loves the way he's responding to her. He must like what she's doing because he starts grunting and his fingers start digging into her hair, and then he tells her he's about to come and pulls out of her mouth, semen spilling all over her chest.
Hot.
He pulls her up to look at him and says thank you, and she just smiles and says you're welcome, and she thinks for a second that he's gonna kiss her, but he doesn't
kiss her face.
And they still haven't kissed?
No.
Mm-mm.
So weird to me.
He asks her if she'd like him to return the favor, but she says she's still pretty crampy, but she'd love to take a nap, so they do. They wake up later in the day completely wrapped up in each other, and he tells her that he slept for about an hour and watched her for the rest of the time. She asks him when the last time he took a nap was, and he says probably right after Grace was born because of how exhausted they were, and then he opens up a little bit more about the early days of his fatherhood and being married to Cheryl during that time. He tells Lane that they got married young and grew up realizing that they didn't quite work together and were constantly fighting. They were just about to break up for good when she got pregnant, so they decided to stick it out, but they still wound up getting divorced right before impact because babies can't fix what's already broken.
True.
After the asteroid hit, Cheryl and Grace moved back in with him so they could both be there for their daughter. But Grace just got sick and never got any better, and Cheryl wound up leaving with the rest of the town. Lane is appalled to hear that Cheryl left her sick daughter with her ex-husband, and Travis tries to defend her, saying it wasn't like that. Grace was as good as dead, and they both knew that she only had a few more weeks at most, and Cheryl leaving was the only chance for her to survive. He says he still loves Cheryl, and she's a good woman, that it wasn't a fair situation for her to be in, and Lane is a little bit worried that once they get back to Fort Knox, he'll meet up with Cheryl and want to get back together with her, and she tells him hopefully he'll be able to find her when they get there. She lays back down beside him, feeling insecure and worried for what their future holds. They've been at the house for 3 days, and Travis is able to walk on his ankle again, but now that it's time to go, Lane doesn't want to leave the house because it's comfortable. They have power, running water, reinforced windows, doors, and food and supplies, and they haven't seen anybody since they got here, but she knows that she needs to leave so she can tell Fort Knox about the drove. They bury the skeleton of the old owner of the house and say a little prayer for him. She's bonded with the dog and realizes that this dog is actually really smart and very sweet. That night, as she's about to get up off the couch to make them dinner, Travis stands up and bends over in front of her so she smacks his ass and says, sorry, I couldn't resist. So he tries to smack her ass in the same way, but she keeps running from him and they have this cute little wrestling match on the couch. Lane tries to hide her ass from him, but he just grabs her legs and throws them over his shoulders and just starts spanking her. He picks her up and carries her to the bedroom and drops her on the bed, and he holds her down, tickling her entire body until she's almost crying, and flips her over and spanks her some more. He pins her body down below his, and she can feel the bulge in his pants pushing against her ass. He asks if she's in the mood for doing it, and she says yes. So he pulls her clothes off and strips himself aside from his undies and starts kissing her back as he slides a finger into her.
When he withdraws his hand, I assume he's going to pull down his underwear, but he kisses me again, even lower, the dip just above my bottom. Before I know what's happening, he lifts my lower body up off the mattress, opening me so he can lick a hard, sloppy line from my clit to my entrance.
She says that felt really good, but she thinks he needs more practice and he should probably try it again. He rips off his underwear and does exactly what she suggested before putting her back down on the bed and spreading her ass cheeks so he can position himself at her entrance and sinks right in. And he fucks her slow and deep as her orgasm builds.
Tell me what you need. He stopped moving, buried inside me. I can feel the brush of his balls against my sensitized flesh. I need it harder, fast. I need, what do you need, darling? I need, tell me. I need the bouncing, I admit in a rush, wondering why I'm not more embarrassed at the confession. I need you to shake me, hard. I need it to come. He makes a huff of sound, and I don't know if it's arousal or amusement, but he picks up his speed immediately, pumping into me hard and fast. I cry out in relief as his motion shakes my whole body. Yeah, more, please, more. He braces himself with one arm and fucks me hard from behind until he's slamming into me with a slapping sound on each thrust. I'm so loud I turn my head so I can scream into the quilt as climax finally racks my body.
More bouncing. He flips her onto her back and starts fucking her that way and asks her if she wants it hard again, and she says yes, she needs it so hard. So he does it to the point that her back is scooting further up the bed every time he thrusts into her.
I'm coming before I know to expect it, and there's no way to smother the loudness of it this time. I sob and I sob and I beg him not to stop. He keeps fucking me until the pleasure is so intense that it frightens me. That's all, I finally gasp. Travis, that's all I can. He slows down immediately until he's no longer thrusting. He rolls his hips slightly. You okay? Tears are streaming down my face. Yeah, just too good for me to handle. I smile so he knows I'm really all right.
Girl, are you okay?
She's just hysterical.
That's literally happened to me before. Really?
Yeah, where it's been like so intense where you're just like literally crying.
My eyes have watered, but I've never been like,
oh. Yeah, I don't think I've cried, but I've been like, oh my god, my legs are shaky.
No, yeah.
I guess the D is fire, Jenna.
Get it.
The D is fire.
I'm living my best life.
Shout out Gypsy Rose. He goes a little bit slower and gentler after this and pulls out, coming on her stomach while they make intense eye contact. He collapses on top of her and asks if she's okay, and she says she's good. Really good.
Yeah, she is.
He asks if he was too rough, and she says no. It was just that if she came, she might have actually passed away. And he asks if she'd tell him if he was too rough, and she says yes, but she was the one who asked for it that way. And he says, yeah, you're right. I just want to make sure I'm treating you good. And she says, of course you are. I've never met anyone who treated me better. And he says, same. After a while, he tells her that they need to leave tomorrow because their people need them. She feels like he means Cheryl, and she says, yeah, it's been nice here, but now it's time to go. They watch the sunset together after dinner, and she knows by the time the sun rises again, their little bubble will be popped and they'll have to go back into the fucked up world again. The dog comes up to them and sits in between Lane's legs and nuzzles her face, and she starts to cry because she knows they have to leave the dog behind. And Travis tells her that he's so sorry.
What?
They can't take the dog.
Why?
That's added responsibility. People don't have pets anymore. That's another mouth to feed.
Fuck this book.
She says she knows, and she buries her face in the dog's neck and cries into him. And when she sits back up, she tells Travis the dog's gonna wait for them to come back, and Travis says, I know he will. And she says they shouldn't have taken care of him at all if all they were gonna do was just leave him. And Travis says that he knows that too. She takes one last shower and climbs into the bed waiting for Travis, and they make slow, passionate sex together. And somehow this feels different than all the other times they've had sex, and she just wants to enjoy this moment with him. He asks if she needs it rough, and she says no, she just likes this. And he asks if she thinks she can come, and she says she doesn't know, but she likes this, so just keep going. They keep going until he tells her he's about to come, and he pulls out at the very last second, coming all over her hip. She holds his body to her, and they fall asleep together until the next morning. They wake up and pack everything up and fill the dog's bowl with food, and the dog is following them around while they pack the Jeep up, wagging his tail occasionally as if he's hoping that he's going to go with them, but isn't sure if he's going to be allowed.
They should just fucking kill him.
Kill him?
Yes. Put him out of his fucking misery.
Have you read this before?
No.
They kill him!
I didn't mean it.
I hate this book.
Not right? Are you crying?
No.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe I will. I don't know.
Lane can barely look at the dog, and she gives him one last snuggle, trying not to cry as she hops in the passenger seat. And the dog comes over and puts his front paws on the floor of the passenger side.
Mm.
Lane reaches down to give a little scratch behind his ears, but the dog just hops right into the car, looking very pleased with himself. And Lane doesn't know what to do because she can't push this dog out of the car. Travis comes out of the house and says he can't find the dog and he wanted to say goodbye. As he slides into the passenger seat, he sees the dog sitting on top of all of their towels. Lane looks at him and says, I didn't put him there. He got up on his own. And Travis says, damn it, he's gonna have to stay right there. There's no other place for him to sit. I'll go get the dog food.
They keep him? Oh, thank God.
I was like, no.
When he gets back in the car, he looks at Lane and then to the dog and says, you and him both, you're going to ruin me, and drives off. They drive all day and Lane already misses the house. That night, they stop to camp and she tells Travis that she feels like the last 4 days spoiled her. And he tells her to come over here and calls her darling.
Darling.
She lays on his lap while he strokes her hair and the dog comes up and curls up right beside Lane. And she falls asleep just like this. And now she feels content. They reach the middle of Kentucky, and there's a lot more people here. They pass through a few groups of people and are even shot at a couple of times. And Lane is desperately homesick for the little cabin in the woods. They stop to stretch their legs, and while she's playing fetch with the dog, they hear engines approaching, and Travis yells at her to get in the car now. She's terrified it's a drove. When civilians are taken over by a drove, the men are killed immediately, and the women and children are raped over and over and over by whoever lays claim to them. Lane thinks to herself that she'd kill herself before that ever happened. Travis drives them off the trail and to a more hidden area to let whoever is coming pass them by. They watch as a truck and some SUVs, a Jeep, and a school bus slowly drive by, and Travis says, that's no drove. That's a caravan. It's probably a town on the move. Lane wonders if they're driving to Fort Knox, and Travis suggests that they try and join up with the group since it'd be safer for them to be traveling with a group, and Lane is hesitant but says okay.
I'm scared.
They slowly drive up on the back of the caravan, and they're immediately shot at, and Travis grabs Lane's head and shoves it down as she huddles over the dog and is like, yeah, maybe we're better off on our own. By the third night camping, Lane is grumpy because she misses the closeness and intimacy she had with Travis back at the cabin, and she realizes she wants them to be a for real couple now, but knows she isn't someone that he would have even looked twice at if she wasn't dropped into his lap by the universe. The next morning, he's like, what's your deal? And she says, she's just in a bad mood. And he says, okay, fine, but did I do something to cause it? She says, no. So he says, she doesn't need to tell him what's going on in her head, but if she's still grumpy tomorrow, he's going to ask again. And she's kind of swooning right now because he cares about her and that's all she needs. The next day, when they're stopped for lunch, they hear engines again, but these ones are moving much faster. Before they can hop in the Jeep and hide it, they're surrounded by 5 men on motorcycles.
No!
Travis has his shotgun drawn, and Lane has the pistol, and the dog is guarding them, growling at the strange, aggressive-looking men. Lane notices a wolf tattoo on one of the men and knows they must be part of the wolf drove headed for Fort Knox. The man tells Travis they're outnumbered and says he wants Lane, and she tells him that she'd kill herself before they could even touch her. Travis says he could easily take out 2 of them, and Lane could take out at least 1, and the dog will rip one of their throats out. Are 4 dead men worth 1 woman who wouldn't even let them get to her? And the man looks pissed and is like, don't show your face around here again, and the motorcycle speed off down the road.
Oh, thank goodness. I feel like they keep getting fucking lucky.
They do. How long will they get lucky for? Especially with a dog?
I wish there was never a dog. It's all fun and games until they bring a dog into the story.
Yeah, it's stressing me the fuck out.
They get in the Jeep and drive for a while until they get somewhere safe, and Lane is absolutely shaken up. She tells Travis she thought she was going to die, and he says he did too. She lets herself melt into him, and now her fear is turning into something else, and she tells Travis she needs him now. She straddles him, and they kiss passionately as he pulls her top down and takes her breasts into his mouth, and she tells him, please, she needs him now.
How can you be intimate in this moment?
Adrenaline.
The adrenaline went straight to her puss.
I feel like it would be fucking drier than the Sahara Desert.
Quite the opposite, sis.
They rip their bottoms off, and he lowers her body right onto his dick as she leans against a tree.
It's not comfortable at all. I'm wet, but not as wet as usual, and he feels bigger than I remember. The bark of the tree claws at my back through my shirt, and my bare skin beneath it gets all scratched up. I feel like I'm barely hanging on. He's completely in control of my body, but I need it. I need him.
She comes, and his speed starts to pick up, and his breathing is shallow, and she knows he's about to come too, but he's not moving to pull out.
He gonna impregnate her.
He's not pulling out. Part of me doesn't want him to. It sounds and looks like he's in pain when he suddenly yanks back his hips, letting his erection slip out of me before he pushes again, his shaft now trapped between our bodies. I squeeze hard with my legs, and he rocks against me as he comes with a hoarse bellow.
A bellow?
Wait, so I didn't get that. So, like, where did he come? Like, in between
between them?
Yeah, like a little cum Sammy with people bread. They eat dinner and he tells her to come over to him. She sits in his lap while he holds her and he tells her that he's sorry he lost control like that. She tells him he's human and he's allowed to lose control sometimes. Besides, she liked it. The next night, they're almost to Fort Knox and they find an empty cabin to stay in till morning. After they get all settled in, they hear a gunshot ring off just outside and someone yelling that whoever's in the cabin needs to get the fuck out now. And Travis is like, okay, we'll come out. We didn't know this cabin was spoken for. And it starts to get a little hostile when Travis becomes unsure if the people are going to hurt them when they come out. Lane yells that it's just the two of them and to please not hurt them. And the voice says, Lane, is that you? And she's like, Miss Jensen. It's her ninth grade teacher.
Holy shit.
That's weird that someone like noticed her just by her voice.
Yeah, she must have a weird ass voice. They come out of the cabin and Miss Jensen, whose first name is Anna, is with three other people. A man called Mac and two women named Maisie and Jenna.
Hey, Jenna.
Hey. Hey, Jenna.
Hey, guys.
And Anna's like, oh, hey, Travis, I barely recognized you, because they all come from the same town. So.
Oh, what are the odds?
Lane is like, okay, can we maybe share the cabin since we all know each other? And Mac explains that the cabin is used as a kind of checkpoint for the network that they use to get people to Fort Knox. But right now they're trying to get away from Fort Knox. They got the message from Maria about the drove, and with everyone seeking asylum there and how dangerous it is to go out for provisions, they just decided to give the whole thing up and evacuate before the drove comes. So they got their message.
Oh, yes. I'd be like, bye. Let's go back to my safe house.
The women want to try and find Maria to join her little girl gang, and Mac doesn't like traveling with large groups, so he came with them. Anna tells Travis that Cheryl is alive, as far as she knows, and left with the caravan this morning. Mac says if they want, he can help them catch up with the caravan to meet up with everyone who's still alive from Meadows. And Travis says, yeah, sounds good. Everyone gets ready for bed, and Travis and Lane lay next to each other on the ground, and she knows tomorrow everything between them is going to change. She decides to hold on to him tonight and be prepared to let him go tomorrow.
That's sad.
They all head out the next morning to catch up with the caravan. Mac goes out and comes back telling them that a group of about 150 of the wolf drove is between them and the caravan. They all decide the only way to get past them is to sneak through the camp that night. Travis looks over at Lane and is like, you got a little dirt on your face, and tenderly wipes it off of her. When it gets dark, they start their journey with Lane driving the Jeep and Anna driving the pickup. They're going to drive as slow and as quietly as possible, and the men will walk behind them with guns. After about 20 minutes of nerve-wracking driving, they reach the other side of the camp without being spotted when they see someone ahead of them with a flashlight. Travis sneaks off toward it, and Lane hears a small struggle and then a thump, and the flashlight goes out as Travis comes back to guard the Jeep again.
Slay, Travis.
Literally slay. He gets in the passenger seat and tells her to drive slow with the headlights off, so she does. Mac pulls up next to them and says there's a church a few miles up the road, and that's probably where the caravan is camping for the night. She switches out with Travis, letting him drive, and collapses in the passenger seat with the dog. They make it to the church and are greeted by everyone, and the Old Meadows County prosecutor is like, Travis, and starts to yell for Cheryl to get over here.
Fuck you, Cheryl.
Poopy pants, Cheryl.
Poopy pants. Poop in your pants, Cheryl. A beautiful, tall, blonde woman runs up and throws herself into Travis's arms, asking if he came here all by himself, and he says no and gestures to Lane.
My new girlfriend.
Cheryl's like, oh, hey, I think I knew your grandparents, and turns her full attention back to Travis. Lane doesn't see anyone she knows, and she's feeling very dejected. She leaves Travis and Cheryl and goes off to hang out with the dog. She hunkers down in her sleeping bag and starts to cry about how now that Travis has Cheryl, she's all alone. Then she hears a voice saying, there you are, I was looking for you. It's Travis, and he sees that she's crying, so he wipes the tears and tells her he's so sorry, and she cries even harder and just says it's okay. She has the dog. He big spoons her for a little bit as Lane thinks about how Cheryl could see them, but she doesn't care. The next morning, she wakes up feeling numb and uncomfortable being surrounded by like 300 people. A bunch of people are staring at Travis holding her, and he's like, they probably think I'm some sort of perv or something. Because he's like 37 or something, and she's 20.
She's 21, and oh, okay. The book just said that he's like a 30-something-year-old man.
He gets up, putting some space between the two of them, and she decides she won't be clingy today. She's gonna play it totally cool. After avoiding him at all costs the rest of the morning, Mac approaches her and is like, what's going on with that? And Lane says, what? It's not like we were together or something. And Mac is like, you could have fooled me.
You were together. Don't lie to yourself.
I just had his pee-pee in my mouth multiple times.
That's it. Mac says, I like Travis. He deserves better than than to be treated like that, and she starts tearing up, saying she knows he deserves better. Mac tells her that even if she wants to give him some space, she should at least be nice to him, because she's literally just, like, walking around pretending like he doesn't exist.
And that's how you hurt your own feelings.
Yeah.
She gives Mac a friendly punch on the arm and is like, damn, your arms are like tree trunks, and he playfully flexes for her before his face falls, and Travis is like, hey, we're heading out. Are you riding with me, Lane? He just walked in on a weird moment.
Oh, he's like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. That's my girl.
Lane is like, no, I'm gonna ride with Anna, I think. So she's like, I'm not riding with you today.
Don't do this, bitch.
I know. Stop. Stop it right now.
Travis says, yeah, sure, and walks away. 3 o'clock rolls around and the caravan is already stopping for the night at an abandoned hotel. Lane is over being around so many people and she's annoyed that they have to stop so early, but they have to be extra cautious when they stop because they have so many people. So if they find a big place to stop, they like have to stop.
Yeah.
She walks off to have a moment alone and Travis finds her asking if she'll take a walk with him. She says, sure. And they walk through the woods, eventually holding hands in comfortable silence. Things feel peaceful until they walk up on 3 men camped around a fire. One of them is the man with the wolf tattoo on the motorcycle. Everyone is shocked and they all just stare at each other for a second, and Travis yells at Lane to run and find help. She books it as one of the men shoot at her, and then she hears the dog growling and then a loud yelp.
No. No.
Charlotte.
Fuck this book.
Now Lane is pissed. She turns back around and cocks her gun because nobody hurts her dog.
Period.
She said, bye, Travis. But the moment the dog's in danger, she said, I'm going back.
Mm-hmm. Same.
She shoots one of the guys aiming at Travis and the dog immediately runs over, snapping at the man on the ground. Travis has shot another of the men and now there's one more who aims at Travis and pulls the trigger. Travis falls to the ground and Lane screams and aims at the man but misses. The man walks toward Travis, clearly going to shoot him again to make sure he's dead. She aims again and shoots the man right in the chest.
Good.
And the man falls down.
Dead.
Good.
She says, don't hurt my man and don't hurt my dog.
She runs to a bleeding Travis as some people run up to them to see what all the gunshots were about. And she rushes to his side trying to stop the bleeding. They get Travis rushed back to the church and a doctor gets the bullet out. But he's still unconscious and he's asking for Lane in his sleep.
That's his girl. Fuck you, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. She goes in and sits with him holding his hand as he grumbles her name. And the doctor says they had to do everything without any anesthetic.
Oh, God.
A few hours later, he wakes up and Lane has fallen asleep. She hears him say, I get a bullet in the chest, and she takes a little nap. She looks over to see his smiling face and says it was his shoulder, not his chest. He tells her he'll never forget what she did to save him, even though she didn't listen when he told her to run, and he thanks her. She says he saved her life every day since he tried stealing her motorcycle, and he's like, I wasn't trying to steal it.
He's like, I'm a good man, Savannah.
He asks about the dog, and she tells him he's okay, just a little bruised from being kicked.
Fuck that man. Bastard.
And then she mentions him calling her name while he was unconscious, and she's like, so do you want me to get Cheryl or something? And he's like, why would I want that? Is she hurt or something?
He said, that is not my gal.
It's not. And she says, no, Cheryl's fine. And he's like, nah, I'm good then. She lays down with him, and he tells her he's sorry for not paying attention like he should have. He deserved the shot that he got, and he never even got the chance to talk to her. And she's like, so what did you want to talk about? And now she's nervous because she's never been in love with someone like this before.
She loves him. I knew him. She loved him.
I knew it.
He says he wanted to know what her plans were now that Fort Knox is gone. Did she want to stick with these people? And she says, not really. They travel really slow and they're really bossy. And he says, yeah, I feel the same way. And she says, what about Cheryl? And he's like, what about Cheryl?
He's like, stop bringing her up.
She's like, aren't you guys going to try and work things out? And he's like, no way. She's not who I care about anymore. And then he asks if she wants to go with Maria or maybe even Mac, since it seems like they get along really well. And she's like, Mac. And he says, yeah, he's clearly interested in you. Any man would be interested in you. And she tells Travis she doesn't want to lose him as she gets all choked up.
Darling, I'm doing a terrible job of saying this. I'll try again. You're not going to lose me. Not unless you want me gone. I'm going to do whatever you do. If you want to join Maria, then I'll trail around behind you like a lost puppy. Me and the dog. Or if you want to hook up with Mac or some other man, I'll make myself a third wheel and I'll practice deep breaths so I don't beat the man's face in for getting to touch you like I. Or if you want to stick with the caravan after all, I'll learn to be patient and put up with being in control. You're not going to lose me, Lane. But I'm trying to tell you that you don't have to fuck me to keep me. You have me, even if you never want me to touch you again.
That is her man.
Yeah.
He's so sweet.
And he says that she shouldn't be stuck with some old hillbilly because they wound up together. He knows that things only happened between them because she was desperate and feeling lonely. And she asks, what if she wants the old hillbilly?
She does.
He begs her not to say things she doesn't mean because if she stays with him, he's never letting her go. And he says that if she wants him, he's already hers. She's fully sobbing now and says she's just so happy. He says he's been crazy about her for a while now and he didn't think he was allowed to have her. And she says, well, you do have me. And he asks if he can kiss her now. She leans down and kisses him and he says that he's been wanting this for ages, but he wanted to keep a proper distance. And she's like, what? You've literally been fucking me. And he says he wanted to keep a proper distance and only did what she asked of him. But she tells him she loves him and he says that he loves her too.
I love you, Pookie.
Mac walks in and is like, you look like you're feeling better, Travis, and lets the dog in, telling them it's their little secret. I guess the dog has just been like sitting at the door tripping people. But the dog isn't allowed in by the doctor. So Mac is like, don't tell anyone, but the dog is gonna come in.
Here's your dog.
The dog runs up to them for pets and they all snuggle. Mac smiles, telling Lane he's glad she finally figured it out. They decide that when Travis is good enough for travel, they'll go back to the cabin where they found the dog.
Yeah.
He confesses that when he first ran into Lane after the motorcycle thing, he'd actually been following her because he didn't want anything bad to happen to her. And she's like, you big sneak. They talk some more and decide they want to join the network of people who helps the displaced find safety like Mac and Maria do. 2 weeks later, they're back at the cabin and the dog is happy to be back. Travis is basically healed now and he is ready to fuck. Because she wouldn't have sex with him while he was injured.
She's caring for him.
And she says, okay, but she's doing all the work because he still has a gunshot wound after all. And he is pumped, but all she does is suck his dick. Boo.
Boring.
2 more weeks go by and she's finally ready, but she wants to make love and tells him she won't deny him anymore. He climbs on top of her and kisses her urgently before sliding into her.
I feel tighter than I remember, like he's filling me completely. I gasp and bend my knees up, grinding my hips against the sensations. Fuck. Oh, fuck. You feeling good, Lane? Yes. I dig my fingers into the small of his back. Oh, God. I feel so good. I missed you this way, too. He pumps a few times. Yeah, nothing's ever felt better than being inside of you. I pull my knees up even more, letting him sink deeper. God, you feel so big. He huffs with amusement and makes a few jerky thrusts. I love how it feels so much my back arches up. Yes, do it like that some more. He builds up a fast rhythm, holding himself above me on his forearms, leaning more toward one side to protect his injured shoulder. You like it like that? He's sweating and smiling down at me. I know my little darling likes her bouncing.
I know my little darling likes her bouncing.
She comes and begs him not to pull out. He comes inside of her as he tells her how much he loves her. She says she's okay if she gets pregnant. And he says, yeah, me too. And they have one more thing to do. They need to give the dog a name. And they name the dog Duke.
Oh,
the dog gets a name. We're in the epilogue. It's a year later. They're on a trip helping some seniors find safe places to live and finally get home after 2 weeks on the road. He says he's ready for some good loving as soon as they walk in the door.
He kisses me and kisses me and kisses me some more. Then he takes off my clothes and caresses me until I'm arching and whimpering. I've been working on his clothes as much as I can, but he finally gets impatient, stands up, and strips down to nothing in about 3 seconds. Then he turns me over on my hands and knees and fucks me until I come. I've barely caught my breath before he's rolling over onto his back and pulling me on top of him. I straddle his hips and ride him eagerly until both of us reach hard releases. By then, I'm exhausted, so I collapse on top of him, naked and sweating and content. He wraps his arms around me and holds me close. I love you, darling. I love you too. And that was definitely some good loving.
She's 5 months pregnant and super nervous about giving birth in this world with no hospital, but knows she can do it. Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, very scary.
She takes a shower, and when she gets out, Travis has a gold ring and asks her to marry him. And she says yes, and she can't believe she found love and happiness at the end of the world. The end.
Cute!
I love it! To think she was like, in the beginning of the book, she was like, I'm gonna die a virgin. Mm-hmm. And now, she got a baby on the way, she's engaged, she has a house, a dog, a fiancé.
She's got it all.
She do.
And look at you. Some of you still single.
Riley. I'm just kidding. Riley just started a fight.
I'm just kidding. Love you guys.
So Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
Honestly, I really, really liked this one. I think I give it like a 4.5.
I don't know.
It's
maybe
so
a 5.
I don't know. It's so good.
And do you think Travis is sexy?
I do.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a sexy man.
Sexy man.
Would you trade places with Lane?
My only reason for saying no is because this thought is like a genuine fear of mine. No. No end of the world for me.
For an end of the world situation, she's got it pretty well figured out for herself.
That's true. That's true. If it could go exactly like this, then yeah, sure.
Sure. Why not?
You know?
She's got a dog. She's the only person in the world with a dog right now. And next week, we're telling Riley all about Birthday Girl by Penelope Douglas. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
What do you think?
This doesn't tell me shit.
Okay, there's water on the cover, and she's like in a pool. I think that she is going to go on like a little vacation, and she's going to go to like a beach resort because it's her birthday. She's going to be with like a group of friends, maybe a true crime book, and she's going to fall in love with a man that's from that country, wherever they are, and they're going to hit it off, but he's going to be like a bad boy, and there's going to be some drama.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I close?
No, not at all.
Oh, fuck. There is a lot of imagination.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, I'd read that book.
Thank you. Thank you.
But we'll see.
We'll see next week, I guess.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes. And at the second tier, you have access to a podcast of unfortunate events where Riley and I will be doing a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Woo! Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.